Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics Show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and I'm really happy to have back as my guest today, Aaron Murphy, who listeners are familiar with. I think Aaron's the one who's been on my show the most since it started, that either a great distinction or a dubious one, but he's a Des Moines bureau chief of the Gazette. I've got to share with my audience that Aaron agreed to come on under two conditions. One, that I don't bring up the current baseball standings where my Cubs are ahead of his Brewers. And two, that I don't bring up the last game of the NFL season when my Bears beat his Packers. So I won't bring those up at all. Aaron, thanks for coming on.
Thanks as always for having me, Robin. That those were in the rider. I appreciate you abiding by those stipulations.
Okay. I will not bring them up. Well, I know you're down in Des Moines and really buried, and I appreciate you taking a little bit of time. And it's just interestingly enough, we may not have time to get to the legislature. I'll have to have you back to talk about that because there's a lot going on in Iowa politics right now. And I wanted to get your take on it for our listeners because it's very, very important. Let's start with Governor Kim Reynolds' decision last week when she announced that she was not going to run again. First of all, you're down there. You're involved in this every day. You've covered her. Did this come as a surprise?
Very much so. Absolutely. And I will give you a little peek behind the curtain to tell you and your listeners how much it surprised me and a lot of my colleagues. We got a notice from her staff that morning, that Friday morning, that an announcement was coming later that day. And so my colleague, Tom Barton, started writing a story that said, pre-writing a story in advance of the announcement that said she was announcing her re-election campaign. That was what we were all sure of. And I've heard from other state house reporters who did the exact same thing. This came out of left. And it's kind of an interesting progression, because if you go back a little more than a year, I think you would have heard a lot of us say that we didn't think she was going to run for election. That seemed to be sort of the consensus. And then somewhere around the caucuses and the election, that seemed that thinking, inside the bubble here in Des Moines seemed to change, and it really seemed like she was going to run again. And we had a press conference here at the Capitol in February in which she was asked about a gentleman who filed to run as a Republican against her at that time. And she started talking about running and using like present tense verbs, right? Like it sounded very much like she was planning to run for re-election again. And here we are just a short couple months later, and this announcement came and blindsided all of us.
Of course, the talk is, and some of the folks I've had contacts with, and it did come as a surprise, I think, to most folks, but there was some degree of thought that, and I don't know that I buy this. You've dealt with Governor Reynolds more than I have, but there was some thought that she might be vulnerable in a primary because of her decision to back Florida Governor Ron DeSantis in the primary. And we know President Trump, well, love him or hate him either, he's vindictive. He remembers these slights. Mm-hmm. And there was concern that he might align with Attorney General Brenna Byrd, who's a big supporter. Is there any scuttlebutt on that over there? Did that play a role? Or
Nothing official, like no intel or insight that I've heard, but I will say that I agree with you. I don't think knowing, I'll put it this way, knowing the governor the way I do, having covered her for all these years, her entire tenure, I have a hard time believing that was a factor in her decision. She has always been very confident in herself, in her political agenda, in her ability to go out on the campaign and talk to Iowa voters, regardless of the political climate. And you're absolutely right about President Trump and those circumstances. But I have a really hard time believing that Governor Reynolds would have been scared out of the race in any way.
Yeah, I know probably some of the people around her better than her. She's been on my show multiple times, but they're not quitters. They are battlers they're fighters. And yeah, I find that hard to believe too. But of course, that was out there a little bit.
Sure. Yep. And I heard that too. Yep.
What is there any, I know this has just happened and you're busy with the legislature and all, but is there any speculation on what might be next? I mean, we could segue into talking about Senator Grassley, who, you know, his seat's going to be up in 28. Is there any scuttlebutt yet on what she's going to do?
Well, I mean, it's nothing real specific. It's just kind of set off this firestorm of possibilities and people thinking about running in that election now. And we were already starting to get a little bit of the taste of people looking to run for the U.S. Senate. And again, on the Democratic side, obviously I'm talking about now, and some of those congressional seats. And now we have Republicans coming out of the woodwork as well. So it's really, I said this in my newsletter recently, it's really kind of blown the 2026 doors wide open all of a sudden. We're it feels like we're already deep into the midterm election here April, the year before. I think one of the unanswered questions, and I don't know why she wouldn't, but I think it is a fair question to ask. And the next time we get a chance, I'm sure one of us will, is whether she will finish the term as governor, which would run through next November's election and technically end even the following January after the election. So I think that's one of the big unanswered questions right now. My gut tells me my suspicion is that she has every plan to, but I think that's an open, interesting question right now. And then we're kind of towards the end of this legislative session. So her agenda, there's not much to be said about her agenda this year, but obviously next year's session will be fascinating, knowing it's, you know, her last before her term ends and what kind of policy she'll be looking at next year in her last one and in an election year.
Before we get to handicapping all the names, and I know listeners will want to, that's always fun to do, but I know she's still got a year and a half and all, but I mean, what, I know as a good reporter and a political analyst, you're thinking about it too, but her legacy as governor, what do you think right now? I mean, again, we've still got some time to go, but what'll be kind of the major themes of her legacy as Iowa governor?
I think there'll be a few things, and she has had the advantage and the flexibility of working with the all Republican trifecta at the state house throughout her entire tenure since she ascended to the governor's office in 2017. And so she has passed bills, legislation, laws that will have just absolutely tremendous impact on Iowa for years, if not decades to come. And everybody's free on their own volition to decide whether they're for the better or worse. But you talk about the income tax rates that she dramatically changed and drop. You talk about the education savings accounts program for public for private education, a gigantic program. You talk about the restructuring of the executive branch of government that she undertook in the last couple of years. Obviously the abortion law, and there's others I know I'm forgetting off the top of my head. She has signed off on some, just the gender identity and civil rights bill just this session. She has signed her name on some just absolutely massive legislation that in their own ways have all reshaped Iowa for years to come. And I don't even think, and because of that trifecta that Terry Branstad didn't have the advantage of for the vast majority of his time in office, even though it was much longer, you can make the argument that Kim Reynolds will wind up being a much more impactful governor in Iowa's history than Terry Branstad. But again, just because of that structure and the ability that she had to sign off on legislation that Republicans were able to get through because of their state house majorities.
That's a great point. It makes it easier to govern when you have full control. And I mean, this goes back to her being a battler. And I know you're aware of this. It just occurred to me on one of the bills, I think, where she wasn't getting Republican support, she supported primary candidates against incumbents. So this isn't the profile of somebody that walks away from a fight, in my opinion.
Yeah, and that was the education savings account bill.
Yeah.
And the fascinating thing about that was that bill that they were holding out for the first time and didn't get passed was actually a much smaller version. It didn't get passed. Like you said, they went into election year. She supported other Republicans against incumbent Republicans in the state house, won most of those, came back and passed a much bigger bill the next year.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, we'll keep an eye on this throughout the rest of her term. I don't think she's done.
No, that wouldn't be her style.
Yeah. I think there's other plans she has. And that segues in. Let's get to probably what everybody's waiting on out there. Who's going to be running for the governor's office on both sides? There are some prominent names most people's heard of, but just go through. Let's start with the Republicans. We've already touched on that a little bit. Who do you think will be running and how do you handicap it so far?
Yeah, and you already mentioned the one name, so we'll might as well start there with Attorney General Brenna Byrd. She has said in other interviews already that she is thinking about, she'll be on a statewide ballot in 2026. She just doesn't know which one yet. She's going to look at that. So she's either going to run for re-election or attorney general or run in the gubernatorial primary. That's the one that jumps right off the page. We've already heard this week from a couple of state lawmakers, Mike Bussolo of Ankeny in the Senate, and then Speaker Pat Grassley in the House, and Representative Bobby Kaufman also in the House, a couple of very prominent names there as well, not in the race, but have said they're at least thinking about it or haven't ruled it out yet. And Agriculture Secretary Mike Naig has similarly not ruled it out, sort of pondering it. And look, that's just sort of people within, you know, the Iowa Capitol and state government. There's any number of possibilities out there beyond where we're spending all of our days and hours right now. So I expect to hear even more names coming out of the woodwork, at the very least, again, in that sphere of thinking about it, if not jumping in yet. So look, Republicans have had Terry Branstad and Kim Reynolds in Terrace Hill since 2010. That creates a backlog in the party. And so now that it's an available office, I expect a lot of people being interested in that seat. It bears noting real quick, too, that one name that without a doubt would have been on that list, but isn't now because of health issues he's had to deal with, unfortunately, the last year or so, is Senate President Jack Whitford from Grimes. We were gearing up for a Jack Whitford Brenna Byrd primary for the longest time, and Jack has been dealing with a brain tumor. He's doing well. He's back at the Capitol and working, but hard to see him running for governor now. So that's one that won't be on. I think it's going to be at least in this early stage, and maybe it winnows a little bit as time moves on. But at least early on, not surprised to hear all the interest, and I'm sure we'll hear even more.
Aaron, do you see a split? And I hate to use the word split because that seems, I mean, pretty intense, but like a division maybe between the traditional Republican Party and then the Trump wing. And Trump has done very well in Iowa. I mean, and his endorsement, he won very easily in the last primary against DeSantis and Haley, but is there still kind of a pushback? And who knows where things will be nationally by the time the election comes right around, where Trump's ratings may drop some and his endorsement may not be as powerful. But is there, do you sense a split between a Trump and a non-Trump wings?
Yeah, well, and to that real quick, that's also always the question of the impact of something like that in the primary versus the general election. You know, a Trump endorsement very well could be a super strong thing in the primary. But to your point, what might it look like in the general election next November? I think you have raised what is one of the most important questions in this. And again, and speaking specifically about the primary, the Republican primary here for governor, what that support, if he chooses to endorse, what kind of impact that have, and does that, if not clear the field, at the very least put a really heavy thumb on the scales. And I, you know, I will, in the days, weeks, and months to come, being asking people much smarter than me that exact question. But as we sit here today, and from my view in the cheap seats, it sure seems like the kind of thing that would be would have a massive impact in this Republican primary if Donald Trump were to choose to endorse. And the natural candidate that jumps right off the page is the one we've already talked about, Attorney General Brenna Byrd. As you've noted, she's been very much a Trump supporter. She literally went out to one of his trials in New York last year, has joined any number of lawsuits on his behalf since taking office as Attorney General. And during the caucuses last year, some people may remember that President Trump, she supported him in the caucuses, and President Trump had some pretty kind words to say about her on his victory night, saying, and I'm paraphrasing here, but something to the effect of saying she would make a great governor someday. So he's already sort of half endorsed her. So if he does that, I mean, that is the question in this primary. How much does that impact that primary campaign and give, assuming it's Brenna Byrd, a leg up? And then we would move on next summer and fall into, now what does that endorsement look like when you're talking about the broader general electorate in Iowa? To your point, he's done very well here in the past few general elections. Every reason to believe that would be a positive thing because of that. But, you know, we're in a kind of a shaky place right now in the political sphere nationally because of the Trump administration. And what does that look like next November? That'll be a fascinating thing to watch unfold.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson. And my guest today is Aaron Murphy, who's the Des Moines bureau chief for the Gazette. We're talking right through here. Interesting conversation on politics, as it always is with Aaron. We've been talking a little bit about Governor Reynolds' decision not to seek re-election and the ramifications of that. And now we're talking a little bit about what the field is going to look like for her successor. We've talked about the Republicans. Let's move to the Democrats. What names are out there? I know one is pretty prominent and who probably, my understanding was going to run no matter what, even if Reynolds ran. But what Democrats are out there?
Yeah, we might be able to get through this conversation a little quicker, Robin. Rob Sand, the state auditor, has not made it official, but is pretty clearly running. And you're exactly right. There was every indication that he was planning to do this, even when it looked like Kim Reynolds was going to be the incumbent Republican in the election. Assumedly even more so now. Last year there were some state campaign fundraising reports that were due and published, and Rob Sand raised $8 million. Now $7 million of that roughly came from his family, but $7 million from the family is still $7 million.
That's still $7 million.
It gets spent the same way on advertising and staff and everything else. And so, look, it's just really hard to see that not clearing the Democratic primary field. That is just such a massive number. It makes it so difficult for anyone else to compete with. And you add in the fact that Rob Sand already sort of starts on second base, so to speak, in a primary, because he's been a statewide elected officer for a few years now. He's won a couple of statewide elections, so he's got some name recognition. He's certainly well known within the Democratic Party, obviously, here in the state. Look, one or two other Democrats may get in the race and try to field a grassroots campaign, but it's just really hard to see that being a competitive primary as long as Rob Sand does, as expected, enter the race.
The Democrats feel a little more hopeful because of some special elections this year, including a couple along the Mississippi River, which my opinion, for what it's worth, I think that's the key battleground. That used to be, as our listeners know, up and down the Mississippi River, Democratic voted for Obama twice, and the Trump era, it switched over. Can it go back? That's the big question. But are the Democrats right to feel hopeful, Aaron, because of these results? Or as the Republicans spin things, are these really not to be paid much attention to because they were special elections and had a low turnout?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of both in there. I think both things can be a little bit true. We are constantly cautioned by the political science experts, and I'm not talking about the party people. I'm talking about people who study this, you know, at a data level for a living. We are constantly cautioned to be careful about drawing too broad a conclusions from special election results. It's such a small percentage of the electorate. It's such low turnout. I think foolish to completely ignore them as well. You can at least, you know, draw some intel from them. And in the Democrats' view, you look at what has happened and absolutely be encouraged by it, and then try to build on what happened there, and maybe look at what kind of candidate you had and what kind of messaging they had, and ask yourself if there was something there that resonated voters in these areas that have at the top of the ticket gone Republican in more recent elections. I think it's a little bit of both. I know in the Mike Zimmer election you're talking about specifically, Republicans talked a lot about candidate quality, and their candidate had a rough start and just maybe logistically didn't hit the ground running like they felt that that candidate needed to, and I have no doubt to believe that that's partially true. But at the end of the day, when the voters went to the polls, they voted for a Democrat in a much higher percentage than they had voted for President Trump in the exact same area. I think it's something that you don't start planning your victory night 2026 election night party right now if you're Democrats, but you look at that and say, okay, something good has happened here that we can reach these voters that you described, Robin, that maybe we have lost in recent elections. How did we do that? How can we expand that out and achieve similar success more broadly?
We're running out of time, so I don't want to get into the legislative stuff. But one last political topic is Senator Chuck Grassley. Now, he's not up again till 2028. He's 91. Right. I think it's a fair assumption that he won't run again. I he's had some town halls that have been pretty raucous lately. And he's had a candidate come out against him, a little bit of a splash on social media. But my question is this. There was talk recently, including by Senator Bernie Sanders and others in the Democratic Party, that it might be better in states like Iowa, which have trended more red, for Democrats to run as independents and not carry the baggage of the Democratic brand. Now, for listeners, I had Dan Osborne on my show, who ran as an independent in Nebraska and ran, I think, 7 points ahead of Kamala Harris. Yeah. Talked about the candidate who came out, announced, I heard he flirted a little bit with the independent label, but did run as a Democrat. What's your thoughts on that based on your conversations?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a fascinating approach, and I don't know that we know whether that would work here in Iowa or not. As a person who sits and watches and observes and covers this stuff, I would be interested to see that and see a legitimate candidate like the one you mentioned in Nebraska try to take on that challenge that way. Look, I will say, to a certain point, that the Republicans are not going to change their messaging on an opponent just because they're an independent rather than a Democrat, they're gonna have the same lines of attacks. They're still gonna call them liberal and out of touch and tax and spenders, et cetera, et cetera. That doesn't matter whether it's to them, whether it's an I or a D at the end of the name. But you know, Iowa voters do also have a sort of independent streak in them. Up until very recently, no party voters officially registered as not having a specific party have been the majority in most of the congressional districts in the state. Only recently have Republicans taken over those majorities. So Iowa voters at the very least feel like they have an independent voting streak in them. So from that standpoint, when you get to a general election, maybe it would give them a better chance. And especially when you look in the some of those battleground districts, or heck, even like the fourth district, where everything is so obviously tilted towards conservatives, maybe some of those voters would feel more comfortable voting for someone with an I rather than a D at the end of the name on the ballot. I don't have a great answer, but I think it's a fascinating question. Would love to see that play out in an election, just for my own curiosity.
Yeah. And you know what? Senator Grassley, we said 91. Who knows? He's on those Dairy Queen blizzards, and I've started
never say never.
Those, and you know what? I think that's the key to his longevity.
Yeah. And he's still, you know, Senator, I mean, look, anyone's got a 9 on the front of their age, you're going to see that a little bit, but Senator Grassley still is moving around well, and has not appeared to have lost any of his mental acuity. He's still sharp and engaging. You mentioned the town halls. He still does regular press calls. So, I mean, never, I'm with you. I can't imagine him running again in 3 more years, but never say never with Senator Grassley.
You never know. Well, Aaron, we've run out of time. I really appreciate it. It's been an interesting discussion. As always, we hit on a lot of important topics in Iowa politics, and we never even got around to the legislature, which, you know, that's important too, but we'll follow that. And thank you very much, as always, for taking the time. It's always informative for listeners, but also a little bit of fun too.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Always good chatting with you, Robin. And yeah, when they're all wrapped up here in the Golden Dome, we'll have to catch up and do it again.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Robin.
Listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.